edition of the Nerd Watch. I, of course, am G Money. I am joined by Professor Barry. Amber's in the house, aka Digit, as well, and the one person that's missing that was here last week. Format, his family's feeling a little under the weather, so he's the caregiver, so best wishes to them. Unfortunately, because of that, he wasn't able to attend our little little festivities, but yep. Just to get things started, how's everybody been this week?
You've been good.
All right? Yeah, you guys weren't here last week. How's everybody doing? We had a big WrestleMania spectacular on the show last week. You guys totally missed it. It was awesome. Right. Yeah. So what have you guys been up to?
Not too much, just writing and pushing ahead.
Right. How about you, Amber? What's going on with you?
Liberty Mutual has come through for
yay!
Yours truly. Yay!
So now we're going to get to fixing that roof.
Met with the roofer. He's going to order the roofing stuff. It's going to be plopped down on the roof, and I'm good to go.
Okay, so what you're telling me is that the water is going to be outside the house as opposed to in the house now.
I won't have to be wearing waders, or what do you call those, floaties?
Wait, floaties, right, yeah. Boots. That's awesome. That's good. What is the repair time on that sucker?
I don't know. This is Maui. That's all I got to say.
All right, well, listen. You have a limited amount of time. You are on a tight schedule. You're a busy lady, so let's get right to it. We did the premiere of Furious 7 this past Thursday night, and unfortunately, because of the ruckus that was happening, there wasn't much of an opportunity to have a little podcast that we wanted to do because there was more people than I expected. So I said we'd save it for the show today. So why don't we start with you, aka Digit Amber? Furious 7, what say you about Furious 7?
I say it was fun, but should have been an hour and a half, not 2.5 hours. That's all I have to say. It was an homage to Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, people are going to give me flack for it, but whatever. Man, it's an hour and a half. How many car crashes, how many rolls and jumps and defying the law of physics can we do?
Right. I will say this. You were sitting next to me, and I didn't know if you were A, live tweeting, or if you were just bored with the film. I didn't know which one it was.
I was tweeting at one point, and okay. Another point I was chatting with somebody and giving them a play-by-play to the effect of, the car is rolling, and it's rolling, and it's crashing, and crashing, and
wow.
crashing.
Wow.
Pow.
Unbelievable. So
oh, it was fun.
So but you had a good time with it.
It was a fun movie, and okay. I will probably show it to my 3-year-old.
I would say that it's safe enough for a 3-year-old.
They have a lot of curse words, but at 3 mm-hmm. years old, you know, whatever.
It didn't. You know what's funny? Maybe I'm just too old, but it didn't seem like that many curses in that film.
Lots.
Was it
really?
Lots?
Lots.
Really?
Yeah.
I did know the vulgar comment that The Rock made in the beginning of the film, but I mean, I didn't notice. I mean, unless I'm getting, it's becoming
Vin
so
Diesel
old.
Vin Diesel dropped a lot of F-bombs.
Did he?
Really? Yeah.
Really?
I noticed like the copious amounts of booty shots, but
right.
That's just a given.
The one
that's a given for.
That's a given, though. Yeah. I mean, when
you don't mind your 3-year-old seeing all the booty shots.
Well,
he's 3.
Yeah.
we go to Macy's or any shopping. So at his height, a cute girl, he just hugs them.
Right. So at his height, everything's a booty shot. So it's fine.
Pretty much.
it's completely fine.
He's 3.
Yeah. Exactly.
Around naked.
There you go. He has no inhibition.
He has no moral values to nudity.
right. He's not morally objectified by that at all.
No.
So that's good. What about you, Professor Barry? You are our resident critic here on the Nerd Watch. Furious 7. I'm going to get everybody's final, by the way, final rating on it here in a second. So I'll just all go around and talk about it. For you, Professor Barry, what did you think of Furious 7?
I enjoyed it. I wish I could say it was the absolute best Fast and the Furious. I don't think it was.
Okay.
I liked it a lot. I feel like it peaks an hour in. Mm-hmm. Once I don't want to give it away, although it's a scene they
show
in the Super Bowl.
So you agree with her a little bit.
It's not so much that it's too long. I feel like it gets to an hour point where there's a scene in which it's marked by the line, cars don't fly. That line is repeated numerous times. It's like, I think it presents a real problem because you wait for the movie to top that scene because it's so amazing.
Right.
The thing about Fast and the Furious 6 is they managed to top all the spectacle like almost consecutively. You get to the plane scene at the end, which is extraordinary. I mean, like they really do build. The scene in Abu Dhabi is so spectacular and so wonderful, and so it's a self parody, but it's also, you know, we're meant to take it seriously to a point,
right?
And it's wonderful. And then the movie goes on to another portion set in America, which, of course, it's essential to the story. I understand why it keeps going, but right. I almost feel like they should have rearrange the second and the third act because the climactic scenes in the movie, while they're enjoyable, while there's lots of mayhem and explosions, you can't top what happens in Abu Dhabi.
I don't think any
movie out this year I've seen can top the Abu Dhabi sequence, which is just spectacular. Fun.
Interesting point. So for you, does it? Let me ask this: what do you consider the best Fast and Furious movie?
Fast Five, I think is.
I think I'm with you on that. What about you? What say you? Are you the same?
Is that the one in Japan?
No, Fast Five is Tokyo. That's Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, that's three.
Tokyo Drift. That's three.
I like
Fast
Tokyo Drift.
You like? I do too. Fast Five is the one in Brazil.
Oh yeah,
with the safe that's careening.
That's the first one with the rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. What did you guys think of Fast and Furious 6's chemistry? The chemistry between these kids. You know, from Vin Diesel to Paul Walker to Jordana Brewster and all those guys. Did you think the chemistry was still there? What did you think?
I think it's a little ridiculous that, because I actually went back and reread my review of the fourth one because I thought, yeah, I do remember writing this before. Like, how many movies does he go, like, you know, just one more time, just gonna ride one more time? Like, no, you need to be a family man. No, it's okay, just one more time. Then I'm out, then I'm done. So they're kind of repeating themselves at this point. I mean, it did catch me off guard in this one that Jordana Brewster really has so little to do now in these movies. We talked about this in the lobby too. It's like, and I like Jordana Brewster. She's very appealing, but I mean, you know, she doesn't really have much to do in these movies anymore.
She wasn't that appealing.
She's walking around in heels in a mansion.
Wedges.
She's walking around in wedges in the Dominican Republic, pacing around a living room, a living room table, talking to Paul the whole time of the movie, which is really weird, I guess. You are right about that. I think we did comment on that, didn't we? So, okay. I
just got to point out one more thing.
What's that?
They never get jet lag.
That's a very good point.
They never get jet lag.
I never even thought about that.
I travel a lot. Regardless if I keep going westward, I always get jet lag, and everyone else, like, even if it's not a lot jet lag, there's some jet lag. None of these guys had jet lag. They didn't need to eat or go potty, and they never get jet lag.
Okay, there's something interesting you said about that, because I will say this, that we did see them eat and converse together in several of the movies.
Oh, that's true.
Now, I have to say this, we are at superhero status with this crew, are we not?
Yeah. At least Danny Ocean level crew. They are tight. They're not just carjackers or street racers.
Right.
I mean, they are like a Mission Impossible team force.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, they are right. They are their own IMF or FNF. They are Fast and Furious Force. They're the Triple F guys. That's what they are. So I mean, I think that it totally. I don't know. Do you with a movie series like this? I guess it is important. Do you go more outlandish or do you get more grounded? I mean, I think you get more outlandish because I just don't know how you can top this.
Yeah.
Because I think that was the point, though. You get more outlandish, you get more crazy, you get more ridiculous, because I think it's one of those things that becomes, you're always wondering if you can top yourself. And James Wan was kind of up to the task. This is his superhero movie, you could say, right?
Sure.
So I was surprised at how fascinating how he really, I was really worried that he wouldn't get the shots right, he wouldn't know how to frame them. He's been doing a lot of horror and psychological horror.
Yeah.
So he really embraced the whole action aspect of it and really had a good time with it. I think, like I said, this is Vin Diesel, for all intents and purposes, in The Rock. These guys are superheroes in this movie. I mean, Jason Statham even. I mean, I'm not giving anything away because everybody has seen it. A parking lot falls on top of him and he lives.
He's unscathed.
That's right.
Not he one. Doesn't just live, but he's like walking upright and he has to be shackled.
Not once, but twice we got head-on collision between Vin Diesel and Jason Statham. No scratch.
Like,
at least Statham acknowledges he has whiplash because he's got to do that.
Right, he's
going to
do that thing.
But yeah, but otherwise, well, no scratches. No, all the glass that must have... All around, nothing.
Vin Diesel.
Their clothes are clean. And it's like coming out of the water and you're completely dry.
Right. Vin Diesel comes out of the car and he does a little shoulder thing like he's hurting a little bit. And he looks at the reinforced chassis, huh? It's like, come on, dude. That's so awesome. I gotta admit, it's absolutely over-the-top ridiculous. I tell you, the stunts are very good. I mean, I will say this. I'm not moving on to a somber portion of the movie, but I don't even think it was somber at all. Paul Walker was there, and it never felt like a memorial the whole time. It felt like a fun movie the whole time. It really did. And you know, you and I were mentioning in the lobby there that there were a couple of scenes where you could tell that you could see his CGI face. I don't know if you noticed. Did you notice his CGI face?
I have to admit, there's some parts where I kind of zoned out. That
might have been it. You're too busy tweeting about how exciting the movie
exciting
was.
I zoned out a bit.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, the cars, this one topped them in cars. Like, okay. I love me my cars.
Right.
And this one, every movie, they get better and better with the cars. And this one was the cherry on top.
Yeah, I think the cars are really cool. I really think that they really... I don't know how they did it, but they really did a good job of... I like the fact that they paid homage to the racing from the very first one. They paid homage to it, which they haven't done in a long time, which is very nice. Because that's where it started, and that was very cool.
Yeah.
And I think that, for me, Furious 7 may not be the best. You're right. I still think Fast 5 is the best out of all of them. I will say that there are a couple of flaws with this movie. I do disagree with you about changing from Abu Dhabi to Los Angeles. I think the purpose was to go back to LA because that's where it started, obviously.
On their turf. Sure.
So, but I mean, the obvious lapses in logic. If you have a helicopter that is an unknown foreign helicopter, and if they're not answering the hail from the United States Air Force, they will be shot down over Los Angeles airspace.
They were shooting down the Beverly Center.
That's what I'm saying, man.
And, like, no way would you be shooting down the Beverly Center.
I tell you what, you can tell that The Rock was busy shooting this and San Andreas because he was in the beginning and in the end. But I tell you what, he made quite an impact regardless. I thought he was a lot of fun.
He did, but I wanted more of Hobbs.
I did too. I love the Hobbs character is great and like, you know.
I like how he ended it.
Yeah. I think he has the best line in the movie. Where's the cavalry? I am the cavalry woman. And that was so fun, so great. It's like they captured the whole essence of the ridiculousness of it. And I think that that's what makes it so fun. And like I said, you know, when you have Vin Diesel, you know, stomping his foot on the ground and the earth cracks.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like there were two titans about ready to fight in that parking lot at the climax of the film. But between Jason Statham and Vin Diesel. But overall, I have to say that I was very, very impressed with how well James Wan took the mantle from Justin Lin. He did a very good job. It was a very good movie. There is one person we're not mentioning, and that's Kurt Russell.
Yeah, we need to talk about Kurt Russell. Thank
you. Kurt Russell was amazing. It seems like they changed his character because we heard a lot that he was going to be Paul Walker's dad.
Right.
Well, it was smart for them to do that because there was, you know, now we can get him back in the movies now. There's no reason to leave him out, so he can be a pivotal part. So that's good. I thought he did a great job. He fit right in with everybody, which is really nice. And it was nice to see him recapture the essence of the beauty of things like Escape from New York, Big Trouble in Little China and him, you know, recapturing that magic with the guns and stuff. I really liked that. That was really good. I thought he did a good job. And he really played along with them, I thought. So I really, then again, I'm a little partial because I'm a huge Kurt Russell fan. So, but do you think, did you like him?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think this is a gift for Kurt Russell fans. I mean, you can see this film, yes, first and foremost, it's a tribute to the late Paul Walker, but it's also a tribute to just how cool Kurt Russell is. I mean, when he puts on the sunglasses and all guns, I mean, it's like a great Kurt Russell moment in a career that already has so many of them. I agree with you. He has such great chemistry with the cast. He looks like he's having a lot of fun. It's a cool character. The thing I wrote about in my review is he reminded me a lot of kind of an older, highly promoted version of the character he played in Tequila Sunrise.
Ooh, yes.
Because his hair is all slicked back.
It
and
is.
He's like, and he's a law enforcer, but there's also something about him we don't know.
Right.
But I thought he was wonderful. So much so that I was kind of bummed out that he doesn't, you know, I don't want to give anything away, but there's a point where he is not in the movie any longer. And I was kind of disappointed that he wasn't in the last act.
His exit, yeah. I didn't like his exit.
Exits a little early, I put it that way.
Yeah, he exited a little early. I didn't. Here's what I didn't like. I will say this. Here's what I didn't like. I didn't like the fact that he was, I don't know how to put it. I should say, let me reverse everything I just said. I liked the fact that he didn't turn into the good guy who was the bad guy.
Yes.
I was expecting that.
Me too.
I was totally expecting that, and it didn't happen. I was like, good. I'm glad he's with us. I was really happy about that. So that was awesome. So that was, I really enjoyed his performance. So, with that in mind, now that we know everything we know.
Well, let me throw out. Another movie where we get to deal with the fact that Letty still has amnesia. Like, they carried that plot over from the last movie.
That's true.
It's dumb. It's like something out of a soap opera. And I thought, at some point, just have Ronda Rousey punch her in the face. She remembers everything. But, like, they carried out that subplot, I thought, way too long. I mean, that subplot should have died with the last movie.
Right. Now, what I was going to say with that in mind, do you think that now that that's all cleared up now,
apparently,
we don't have to worry about it, it's all good. I thought that was dealt with okay. It did feel very hammy, some of the scenes,
yes.
Very soapy. You are absolutely right about that. Did you like the whole Letty thing at all, or was that kind of for you? Was it really? Okay. Okay. So then let's get into the emotional content of the film.
Sure.
The final act, which is no big surprise. Amber, how do you think they handled the exit of Mr. Paul Walker, a.k.a. Brian O'Connor?
I liked the very end.
Did you?
I really liked the very end. I don't like the beach scene.
Okay.
It felt like a Cialis commercial.
I never thought about
that. That's definitely not what they were going for.
That was
I
not
know,
what they were going
but
for at all.
I've seen so many commercials that was like...
Did you expect him to be like, Mom, have you ever had that not-so-fresh feeling?
Right. No, because he was a little boy,
right?
So I don't think the little boy would ask the mom that. But the kid might say, Dad, have you ever had a moment where...
So let's clarify, because the scene is broken up in two moments. There is, in the foreground, it's, without giving anything away, it's Paul Walker.
You're not.
Really
you're
nice,
not.
Having a really nice family moment. This doesn't give anything away. And in the background, we have the crew members... And on the one hand, they're talking about O'Connor, but really, they're talking about Paul Walker.
They
and
are.
They're giving these really loving, platitudes to his character and who he was. And you know, it's interesting because they're really getting away with murder here because at this point, they're not even talking about Brian O'Connor. They're talking about Paul Walker.
Of course, they are.
They're talking about how he will be missed. They're talking about what he has and what he brought and what the family dynamic that he has. So, I mean, I guess that's my question. Like, do you think that was... do you think it was overly sentimental? Do you think that aspect of it worked? Or were you just so distracted by how sappy it was on the beach?
I think they could have cut that whole thing out.
Really?
Because, to me, it was a non sequitur. It felt like... It didn't fit.
So you liked what G liked, where the rose parting, that whole, that final
I love that part.
That was great.
I like, you know, even if they ended it where they cut into it and then they're driving, because they're like all on the beach and then all of a sudden Vin Diesel's in a car by himself, even though his wife, where'd she go?
Right,
where
right.
did the other guys go? Where did that... girl go, yeah. And then all of a sudden he's driving, and then Paul Walker comes out driving.
I think it was hard for him to say goodbye.
His wife? That like, was what about the other, like, where is everybody else?
They're at the beach chilling with Brian.
And it's not like when he turned off, he headed back to the beach. He was like driving off into the sunset.
Well, I think it was all. I think it was more figurative than literal.
Yes, symbolic.
Symbolic.
We don't
want
to think like
symbolic.
Brian said, like, "Hun, I got to get some cigarettes."
Right.
Like that's like the last we ever saw.
Right. So for you, the ending could have been great if they cut out the beach part.
Oh my gosh, please cut out the beach part. Like, if leaving anything, like, if they have, oh, we're going to do a revision right before we re-release it, or, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, cut
that out. What about you, Professor Barry? What say you?
Well, like I said, I mean, on the one hand, I appreciate them doing that. I mean, I think as a tribute, it's really, really nice, because a lot of these films, you could really tell the seams.
Sure.
The Crow is an example, I think, of a movie that does it right, where they manage to mix the doubles and the CGI and the tribute to the actor that's gone in a way that's really beautiful and moving. And I think this movie comes really close. I mean, we talked about it. I thought the CGI Paul Walkers were distracting.
They were. Really, I agree with you.
Not to a point where it ruined the movie, but, I mean, like, the example I gave, I mean, for me, it's kind of like in Terminator Salvation, where you get the CGI young Arnold. Where it's like, oh, okay, you kind of admire that they even attempted that. It's a really ambitious special effect, but it doesn't work. It's
right.
Distracting.
It is.
There's a scene where the whole crew is back in L.A., and they're all standing on a cliffside. They're looking down at the city. It's a great cinematic moment.
Right, I remember
and
that.
Like, and clearly they CGI inserted Paul Walker into that scene because
you see all the faces down the line.
And there's every dialogue. Yeah. And he's, like, standing at the end, and even, like, the positioning of his figure looks a little off, so it's like it's almost like a special effect they didn't finish. But at the same time, I do gotta admire them because they, as we all know, they were in a position where they could have shelved the movie, or even worse.
They did.
They shelved it, but then they...
For a whole year.
Exactly. And they reconfigured the story. I mean, they could have recast him. They could have cut him out of the movie. They could have, oh my God, they could have killed him off early in the movie. I think what they did was so much more ambitious to keep him in the entire story frame. So I admire that because I think for the most part they got away with it.
Yeah,
I think so. I'll say in terms of the sentimental beach ending, the one thing that didn't feel totally right with me.
Okay.
And because you guys are Fast and Furious junkies.
Let's
discuss this. Here's my problem with getting all warm and fuzzy about it. Because on the one hand, I get it. They're trying to pay tribute to the actor. But the character for me, going this whole thing that it's always been about family. I mean, we got to remember, O'Connor and Toretto hated each other.
They did.
For
four
movies. And it really wasn't until the fourth one where O'Connor makes the leap from agent to a criminal that the brotherly dynamic between him and Vin Diesel actually happened. So I thought it was kind of funny that, like, they show all these clips of them happy and smiling in the first two movies when, no, like, this is when he was lying to him. This is when he was an undercover cop. Mm-hmm. This is when this whole relationship that O'Connor had with Toretto and his family was a facade.
Sure.
And it really, like, the whole brotherly thing didn't really happen until, like, just a couple years ago, a couple movies ago. So I find it a little odd because, for me, this series, respectfully, has always been about action and booty shots and the cars. So, like, trying to make it very, very sentimental, on the one hand, I get it, and I think they got away with it, but I think it's a little forced.
Mm. Not just booty shots, but hot, tattooed Asian chicks. So
that was in the beginning.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
A little of everything.
So, but I will say this. I have to disagree with the beach thing.
Okay.
I thought the beach thing was very... I thought it was very sweet, and I thought that was the goodbye to Paul.
Sure.
And then the goodbye to Brian was at the very end. And I thought that they fit that in. And I will say, you are right about it. I never thought of it, but it does feel a little bit like a Cialis commercial. I will give you that.
There you go.
But for something...
You
I have to
that
say,
scene first. Now, every time we watch that scene.
I have to say that it was really sweet, though.
This is sponsored by Cialis.
Yeah. It was really sweet to see him go away like that. And like I said, with him going down one road and then them going down the other, I thought that was very cool. So now we can move on with Furious 8. And be just fine.
Yeah.
I think there is no doubt there is going to be a sequel. They've already talked about it.
And there's a scene that we haven't discussed, which I won't describe, towards the end that sets up a sequel. Clearly.
Yes, clearly.
And I don't know, and I have very mixed feelings about it because it's obviously happening. Kurt Russell was on, what was he on? He was on a talk show the other night where he was already discussing that he and Vin Diesel already have plans for Furious 8, what the character's going to do, what's going to happen.
As long as Kurt Russell's in it, I'm in.
And apparently he's totally in. The movie's going to be kind of based around his involvement, which is awesome.
Because it legitimizes the gang.
It does. But it brings up a question you asked at the top of the show. How do you top this?
That's true.
How do you top the Abu Dhabi sequence? How do you top the plane? How do you top the Fast Five? I mean, you know, we're at the point now where unless they, like, steal shuttles from NASA and it's, like, two shuttles racing each other through the galaxy, how much further over the top can you possibly take this series?
That's
you
very
gotta
true.
Jump the cars out of the shuttle because it's about cars, not shuttles.
That's true.
I was slightly disappointed because for me, Furious has always been about the cars.
Right.
And they usually feature or have in there, I guess for most people, they think of it as a cameo. I think of it as a cameo for cars. They did not have the Tesla. How do you not have the Tesla?
Yeah, you know what?
Because the Tesla is like the biggest thing in the last few years. And anyway.
I have to admire the fact that they didn't put the Tesla in. Let me tell you why. I will say that I like the fact that they were going for complete and utter gas-guzzling machines. And they weren't – I like the fact that they weren't politically correct. And they were going – because the Tesla is a big electric vehicle.
I want to see that giant battery explode.
It's true. I guess
it has nothing to do with gas-guzzling. It has to do with featuring fast new cars that came out.
I love the cars that were in it, though.
I do. But what I'm saying is – that's the thing about Fierce is it features cars. It's a car show on steroids.
Right.
So, but it does, like, whatever cars that are cool, they amp it up. I wanted to see an amp
up. So you wanted to see modifications in the whole
line.
I
want to see nitrous. I want to see all that. On the Tesla.
Nice. I'd like to see that myself, to be honest.
Because to me, the Tesla is like the Mac with Steve Jobs, right? So I want to see this nice, extremely simplistic-looking vehicle,
right?
All tricked out.
So what you're saying is the Tesla is Elon Musk's iPod.
That's what I'm saying. You gotta trick it out.
Nice. I like that. I like the way you put that. That's awesome.
How I like.
All right. So let's break it down.
Okay.
Amber, where do you put on a scale of Fast to Furious, where are you going to put Furious 7? For you.
For me.
For you.
I have two scales.
Oh, you do?
I do.
All right.
On the emotional scale, I would give it a 4.
Oh, nice. Okay.
On the car scale,
mm-hmm.
I give it a 3.
Okay. So your visual stimuli was not stimulated enough.
No, I'm telling you, I am a car girl. So
okay.
The car, I was a little... But I'm telling you, the next one, they better be able to outdo that car that they have. I'm not going to give it away because to me, that would be a spoiler.
All right. What about you, Professor Barry? Where do you put it?
I'll do my usual star rating and just say that, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5, I always felt comfortable with 5 because, I mean, there's so few movies I grant the 5 stars seal of approval. But in this case... I'll say somewhere, you know, I've been waffling about it, but I'll give it 3.
I'll just
give it a solid 3.
Because
I like the film, but I wanted more because in some ways it is the penultimate Fast and Furious.
It is.
And it is a big monster turning point for the series. And if it isn't, I mean, obviously it's not going to be the last one, but it feels like it's the last one. And it could have been if they wanted to, you know.
It could have been.
So if they decide, like, you know what, we're going to, you know, we're just going to call it quits. If this is the last one, then good, because it feels like an end of a story. But having said that, I don't think it's the strongest in the series, although the series is still strong, which is kind of amazing. We're at number 7.
They keep getting better, ironically enough. I mean, as far as, or I shouldn't even say better, I should say outlandish.
Great, though. I mean, like, you know, because this is Hollywood Reporter wrote about this. Like, this is a series that everybody thought was dead and buried after Tokyo Drift. Like, there was talk about the fourth one, Fast and Furious, going straight to video. I mean, it's like, it's crazy.
Not anymore.
How they've, like, this has become one of the biggest, it was the biggest opening in the history of Universal Studios. It's become the biggest, one of the biggest franchises ever.
And if they don't do a sequel, they're just leaving money on the table.
Yes.
So, of course, it's going to happen.
If they don't do a movie sequel, they can do a TV series.
You think so? It's too outlandish. I don't think being a TV show would be just ridiculously ambitious.
Give me an animator.
Look at you. Oh, my God.
I want to see Furious crossover Transformers.
I can actually see that. It's funny she says that because I can actually see that crossing over with superheroes and the whole night. I can actually see that.
Michael Bay directed one of these movies. You'd be like, that's perfect.
It'd be perfect. Yeah. All right, so you give it a three. You give it a three as well. Three stars. I have to say that personally for me, I would give it a... It's a 3.5 for me. 4-star was five because 4-5 was great.
Yes.
So for Furious 7 for me was over the top ridiculous. It is so much fun to just sit there. It seemed like I was the only guy getting the jokes in the theater because sometimes I felt like I was the only guy laughing. But I really enjoyed the ridiculous of it. I'm glad James Wan, he did a great job in his rookie debut.
Yeah.
Or in his debut, just embracing the franchise the way he has. And he's really got some chops. I mean, you know, he's been so pigeonholed in the horror genre that he came out guns blazing and just did a great job with Furious 7. So kudos to him. Kudos to the cast. They did a great job. Paul Walker was fantastic. So wonderful. So overall, I'd say it's a 3.5. Three star because I'm the half guy. So yeah, I'd say it's a three. Between the three of us, it's a 3-star movie. So it's definitely one to watch if you haven't seen it. All right, now Furious 7. We're gonna move on to some Paul Walker stuff. I'm gonna talk about, but before we do, AKA Digit, Amber's got to get out of here. But before you leave, Amber, I do have a question for you. We haven't heard from you in the video space. Anything exciting happening? Is there a Netflix pick or something we should be watching on the tube? As of late, have you been...
Sorry, I've been binging on Game of Thrones.
Of course, you're getting ready for the premiere April 12th.
That's right.
I know you are. Okay,
and
so...
And then Daredevil's coming up.
Daredevil, right. I was gonna say that April 10th is Daredevil. That's this... Is it this Friday? It's this Friday.
It's Friday.
So what we should be... we're all admins on the page. Why don't we all make some comments, see what we think April 10th when it comes out on Netflix? Yeah. I won't be home until later. I don't know when everybody's going to be able to view it, but I'll probably
be on Netflix, right?
Yeah, no, I'm going to be viewing the first episode probably after it's already been released because I'll be working. So, well, you know, by all means, I'll put up some stuff and we'll talk about it. I'm going to try, and I'm assuming it's going to be 13 episodes. I'm guessing. So I'm going to try and binge.
I think so. I think it's 13 episodes.
Yeah, I think I'll try and do at least three a day if I can get them done. I know that... That's nothing for you. So
I'm running my business, and I'll be watching, and I'll be taking care of a 3-year-old, and I've got volunteer work, and I'm going to be going to the Ocean Vodka tasting championship thing.
Oh, look
so
at you.
We're going to see.
Will you be one of the tasters?
Of course.
Of course awesome. She is. Of course awesome. She is. All right. So I want to know, you got to give me a thumbs up or thumbs down since you're the Netflix gal on Bloodline. I want to know.
Bloodline's a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay. Good. I don't know.
Well, it's a thumbs up right now.
Okay,
I haven't finished it.
I
haven't been able to like truly binge. But yeah, it's a thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Okay. Yeah. Good. All right. Awesome. Fantastic. We'll talk more videos later on in the show. But Amber, Digit, thanks for coming by, giving us your expertise in the realm of Asian vehicles, I guess.
Cars,
I guess.
You mean?
Cars, yes, Asian cars. She wants better cars, faster cars, and she wants a little Elon Musk in Fast 8.
Oh, he's a cutie.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
Elon has got like that nerdy, asshole-ish kind of hotness to him.
Jeez.
That's all I'm saying.
Wow.
Oh, sorry. Goodness.
Yeah, this episode Louise. Is rated PG-13.
Mild profanity. Thanks to Amber. Amber, for coming by. We certainly appreciate it. We'll see you later, dear. We'll see you back here next week, Tuesday, for the show.
I'll walk her out. It's starting up there.
Well, why don't you go and walk her out while I talk about Fury 7 really quick. Back. Well, listen, I'll just let you guys know that Professor Barry and I are going to be talking a little more about Paul Walker's career here in just a sec. Furious 7, just to wrap things up for this section of the show, Furious 7 is a definite must-watch. It is a lot of fun. If you are in the Fast and Furious camp, you will not be disappointed. It is an amazingly fun outing for Vin Diesel, Paul Walker, Ludacris, and Tyrese Gibson and the crew. They all did a great job. Everybody was very funny. Everybody was entertaining. You will get your money's worth. This is a popcorn movie if you've ever seen one. You will absolutely love Furious 7 if you have come aboard before. It should not be missed for sure. So, with that in mind, Professor Barry and I are going to be talking a little bit more about Paul Walker here. A couple of movies of his that I wanted to mention that he does other than Fast and Furious, which are a few of my favorites. So I thought we'd just mention a couple before we move on to some more movie news and some TV news. Paul Walker has had quite a film career. He's not always been the most the actor with the most accolades by any stretch of the imagination. But are there a few films in his filmography that you would recommend other than Fast and Furious?
Definitely. He's one of these guys. It took a while for me to warm up to because, yeah, I think to put it nicely and be, you know, but to be honest about it, because I think he was really starting to get at a point where the roles got more interesting. And it's not that he's not interesting as Brian O'Connor, but, you know, the word is dynamic. I don't think his early work was dynamic. I mean, you look at him in The Skulls or, what was it, She's All That, and you go, okay, he's a handsome guy. The camera loves him. But what else can he play? he did a Disney film. I don't know if it's one of the great live-action Disney movies, but I've always loved it. It's called 8 Below.
I remember that.
8 Below, directed by Frank Marshall, one of my favorite genre directors. And I think it's a fine film, and I think he's wonderful in that movie.
And there's no music in this one? Frank Marshall, there's no music in this movie. It's not a musical.
Oh,
right?
You're thinking of Rob Marshall.
That's right, Frank Marshall. That's right. I'm thinking Rob Marshall. Is that his brother?
I don't think so.
They're not related, are they?
No. I don't think. Yeah, this All is right. Frank right. Marshall, the guy right. who did Arachnophobia.
That's
Alive,
right. Frank Marshall's
and,
great.
Yeah. And Congo, yeah.
Congo, that's right. That's an underrated movie.
Yeah, he does most of the action. Yeah, Rob Marshall, I think, like, his non-musical is probably, like, Memoirs of a Geisha. It's a different dude. But, yeah, I've always liked that one. I do want to talk about Running Scared, because the first time, you know...
That's on my list.
Yeah, the first time I saw it, I thought, this movie's a little much, and it was hard for me to even admit that I liked it, because I needed to take a bath after I saw it, because it's such a skeezy, sleazy movie. But
it
I gotta say, I admire the crazed energy of that movie. I really admire his performance in that film. Yeah, that's a big one for me. You're a fan of Running Scared?
I am a huge fan of Running Scared. I like the... it's very much in the vein of a comic book movie, in essence. And I really think that he did a very good job of carrying that movie, considering the weight the director put on him for the story. I really thought it was a very well done movie. I own it. It's a must see for me. I think Running Scared is I think it's lost in the shuffle for his career. So for me, I love Running Scared. So that is a movie that should definitely be seen. Though, do not mistake this one for the one starring Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Is it really?
Yes, it is. I love it. I wanted to see them reteamed just to watch another Running Scared.
Well, I agree with you. They've had great chemistry.
They absolutely had great chemistry. And normally, when they have great chemistry, they hate each other off screen. Normally,
right.
But you don't know. I love Running Scared. I've always wanted to sit down with Billy Crystal. No one ever asks him about it ever, and I've always wanted to talk about Running Scared.
Is
and
his first major starring role.
It was a big deal, and I really admire it. I've seen it. What? 9-10 times I've watched it. I love it. Every time it comes on, I'll sit down and watch it. I own it. I'll sit down and watch it. I love it. So anyway, going back to Paul Walker, Running Scared, what else is on that list for you?
You know, there's one that I'm embarrassed to say I haven't seen it yet, but everyone tells me, like, I need to take the time to see the movie called Hours. Apparently it's one of the last films he ever did.
Yes.
I've heard he is, like, not only good.
Is that the
but
one,
just,
the Hurricane Katrina one?
Yes. Okay. I've heard, he's not only is it just a good performance, like, he's sensationally good in it. That it's the film that really could have hinted at the more diverse dramatic roles that are probably right around the corner for him.
Right. That was the one starring Genesis Rodriguez, and he's trying to rescue the baby, I guess.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, I wanted to see that too. I have not seen it myself. So that, I would like to see, apparently there was some emotional depth in that film and things of that nature. He also did a movie called, or in that vein, I guess, dramatically, called The Lazarus Project.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, neither have I. So, are those the three that you would recommend, I would assume?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, do you have a list in front of you?
There's
got to be something I'm forgetting.
I have nothing in front of me, but I do know that there is one movie that I no longer that I had considered for a long time to be my guilty pleasure, which I never admitted to, and it starred Paul Walker. But it's no longer a guilty pleasure because of his passing, I think it should be lauded a bit more. And everybody laughs at me, but I think it's a fun movie to watch, and they actually tell a story. And that's the movie starring Paul Walker, Jessica Alba, Scott Kahn, and Josh Brolin, and Ashley Scott. And it's called Into the Blue. I love Into the Blue. I love that movie. I don't know. It's the setting. It's a take on Nick Nolte's The Deep with Jacqueline Bisset.
Yeah.
It's from the 1970s, the one written by Peter Benchley, starring Louis Gossett Jr. I am a huge fan of Into the Blue. Loved it. There are flaws in this movie that you could just drive a truck through, but that's not the point. The story is actually very good. The acting is very it's serviceable, to say the least. But I will say that I am a thoroughly... If you've never seen Into the Blue, you should. I don't know. Did you watch Into the Blue?
I did, because you're the biggest Into the Blue fan I know. And you yes. actually gave me your DVD copy of it. Like, I've got it on Blu-ray. I don't need this anymore. You need to watch this. And like, watch the deleted scenes. And, yeah, so I enjoyed it. And I would say I'd enjoy it for the exact same reason you do. I mean, you're absolutely right. It's like The Deep, but only that it's like The Deep had a real seriousness to it.
It did.
Into the Blue is also a treasure hunt movie with yes. a lot of gorgeous people and very little clothing. And it is a lot of fun. And I don't know if I'd call it a guilty pleasure, because I agree with you. I think it's such a well-made and engaging film.
Right.
John Stockwell is the director of Blue Crush. This is a guy who was a character actor. He was in My Science Project and a lot of other... He was just this teen actor who made a transition. He was also in Christine. He made the transition to being a director. And he tends to make these really fun, beach, sexy movies. And,
he does! And in Blue Crush, Blue like you said.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he makes some fun movies. Yeah, and I enjoyed it in the Blue.
Yeah, so if you were looking into his filmography, Paul Walker's filmography, I would say that Into the Blue should be high on your list of films to see if you've never seen it before. And they look pretty, and it's also, like I said, it's not a bad movie. I mean, the story's fairly well done and things like that. So I have to say I am high on Into the Blue for sure. I love that movie. Every time I get a chance to watch it, I will watch it. There's another film that Paul Walker did right before Furious 7 that hit the theaters, and that was Brick Mansions.
I have not seen it.
Neither have I.
I have not heard good things.
I have not heard good things, but I did hear something from Format, our Nerd Watch extraordinaire that comes on the show. He did say that it's actually very good. He says it's serviceable. He says it's a lot of fun to see. So Brick Mansions, I think it's available on Netflix too.
It is, I hear there's a lot of parkour in that one.
Yeah, lots of parkour. And then he's also in the film, one that I do not recall ever watching, Takers?
Yeah, he's in the ensemble of that one. I think Matt Dillon's in that one.
Yes.
Hayden Christensen. There's a lot of people in that one. It was actually very successful.
Was it good?
I have not seen it.
Not seen it?
I heard it wasn't all that memorable. The one that I do remember him being in the film, I remember being very taken off guard that he was in the movie, and I really enjoyed his work in it. It was something of a cameo, but he's very good in Clint Eastwood's film, Flags of Our Fathers. He's very good in it.
He's in Flags of Our Fathers.
It's a small supporting role, but I remember I admire the fact that he went out of his way to be in a Clint Eastwood movie. That says something about an actor right there. And it's a very good character performance in that, though it's a small role.
So let us just say right now, Paul Walker has a may not be the biggest filmography ever, but there are definitely nuggets of wonderful in his filmography for sure.
Yes.
Watch Into the Blue. Watch all the Fast and Furious movies. Take a look at Running Scared. For me to this day, it's still a unique film.
It's very extreme, but it is. If you're down for like a Pulp Fiction kind of film where everything is in extremes, everything, Vera Farmiga is terrific in that movie. There are some shocking subplots in that movie. That movie has some real guts. It takes guts to write a movie like that. It takes guts to make a movie like that. And I admire what Jeffrey Kramer did with that film.
Wayne Kramer.
Wayne Kramer, thank you.
The guy
from
the guy who made The Cooler.
The Cooler, right.
With William H. Macy and Maria Bello, which is great too.
Yeah.
So I will check that. You guys should check that out for sure. Paul Walker's filmography, definitely something to look at considering his passing, and with Furious 7 now you could say in the sunset now because it's already reached its peak at the box office. And that's the last film we're going to see him in. All right. Now, Professor Barry, anything else you've watched as of late that you wanted to write home about or talk about at all? Anything that we missed, like, last week that you watched?
Well, I mean, I've been watching a lot of Bates Motel. Right. I've been very happy with season three thus far. It's been very good. I guess I'll mention this really quickly because I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. This was not planned. I have not planned on discussing this with you. But I am very curious what you think about this movie because this is a film I grew up with, and it was kind of a milestone in my teenage years.
Interesting.
And I don't think it holds up well at all. I watched it to write an article about it for the Looking Back column of Now I Watch. Mm-hmm. Dangerous Minds. You a fan?
Oh, with Michelle Pfeiffer?
Yes.
From the song that's more famous than the movie?
Much better than the movie, I think, yeah.
I think that Dangerous Minds was a blatant ripoff of Stand and Deliver.
Sure.
And Stand and Deliver did it much better with much better actors.
Much better, yes.
So I would say that I am not a fan of Dangerous Minds. I think Michelle Pfeiffer could have done much better, but of course, in that era, that's where the money was, is in those kinds of movies.
Yes.
So I would say that I am not a fan of Dangerous Minds at all, and I barely remember it. She's a former Marine, I guess.
One of the most unlikely former Marines in all of cinema history. Yeah, and not to say that she has to have like a spiky hairdo and like coming with muscles, but the way Pfeiffer presents herself and the character, she comes across as maybe a former librarian or
yes.
a former the head of a sewing circle. Like the fact that she is this 9-year veteran of the Marines does not come across at all. Even in the scenes where she's teaching her students martial arts so improbably, you get the sense like maybe Linda Hamilton couldn't do it. Maybe Sigourney Weaver was too busy. But like Michelle Pfeiffer, as glamorous and as charismatic as she is in that film, it's definitely a movie star performance. It's not like a real. It's not, and she's a great actress. And it's not a great performance.
That vehicle felt to me like it was. You're watching this because of Michelle Pfeiffer, not because of the story.
Sure.
That's what you're watching it for.
And the story is so hard to believe. It's weird because it's based on a true story. I remember reading the book it was based on, My Posse Don't Do Homework by Luann Johnson, which was very compelling. And I thought it had this really great angle where she was using lyrics by Tupac to reach her students. She would teach them conjugation and scansion and all that by breaking down lyrics to Tupac. And in the Disney, this is a Disney film, in Dangerous Minds, which is a terrible title, by the way, Dangerous mm-hmm. Minds, what does that even mean?
Right.
She's using Bob Dylan lyrics, which I don't really think would engage teens of the mid-90s, to be honest, especially mm-hmm. not teens in the hood, to use that cliche. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she's like bribing them with candy bars and trips to like the fair. I was amazed.
More innocent time, right? It's a much more innocent time back then.
It feels like, it was a Jerry Bruckheimer, Don Simpson movie back when they were doing movies together. And I was really struck by just how false it felt.
You're right, because there were no fighter jets. There were no NASCAR racing. There was none of that.
What do these guys know about the hood? You know, what do these guys know about being a teenager in the 90s? There's all these scenes of the teens like messing around. The soundtrack is always blaring. There's like it feels like a commercial for itself.
Absolutely, it certainly does. I was really surprised and really taken aback when you said Dangerous Minds, because that is a movie that I don't even think really gets. It's not even a forgotten classic. It just gets forgotten.
It was a huge hit when it came out, and I've always thought that it's because of the Coolio song. Because no matter what you say about Coolio, it is a great song. It definitely captured the zeitgeist. I mean, that was the song of the summer of 1995, and that movie made $95 million, which for 1995 is a lot of money.
It made a lot of money. I don't know how to put this. I remember that. I think, like you said, I think it's on the back of the Coolio song for sure.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything. There's no reason to revisit it. There was no even reason to look back at it.
Well, I was hoping there was, but apparently I was wrong.
You were completely wrong. Not a fan at all. Maybe I got to go back. Maybe you're right. Maybe I do have to revisit it. But I don't remember that staying with me like Lean on Me did or Stand and Deliver did.
Those are great films.
Those are great movies. So. You know, and those felt more honest Those felt more real, if you could even use that term with movies. But yeah, it did. So with that in mind, you're right. I think Dangerous Minds is one definitely not to look back on, and I think I'd give it a maybe 1.5 or 2 for me. That's where I'd put it.
Sure.
So, but anyway, moving on to some bigger and more interesting news, Professor Barry, you're a huge Star Wars fan.
I am. The Force is strong with me.
And the Force is quite strong with me.
You can feel it.
There are two big pieces of news. First off, Professor Barry, Star Wars is coming to digital HD. No longer will you have to illegally download anything anymore. You can actually own it digitally and be on any of your devices. And it's coming straight from Disney. And it's going to cost you $20 a movie. And you can have them digitally with all the special features, and you don't even have to have it in your library. It's already in your digital library. That came out. And it's going to be, by the way, I posted on the Nerdwatch Facebook page a link saying no version has been confirmed. Well, it has been confirmed. They are the Lucas revisions. So they are not the ones you're looking for. they're not the ones that most nerds are looking for. But, like I said, I'm a fan of the revisions, regardless. So I love them all, and I think that they all have something special. Nothing will ever recapture the magic of the originals, but the fact that they're coming out now is very nice, considering the fact that we are, 6 months away from a new Star Wars movie, if you can believe that. That is amazing to me. And speaking of that, are you interested in getting digital copies of that at all, or do you want hard copy? Are you a hard copy guy?
I don't know. I Julia, years ago for Christmas, my wife Julia. Yeah, thank you. She purchased the DVD of the box set where it's the original theatricals and the special edition.
I remember that one.
Yeah,
I got rid of that one like an idiot. You still have that, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
I did. You know, I'm so glad I have them because I think it's a very valuable, side by side example. I mean, I think this thing that Luke has done, it's infuriating to a lot of fans, and I'm glad that you like the additions. For me, it's hit and miss. I would have to go through each and every one because, like yourself, I grew up with these movies. So when the special editions came out, it was a matter of like, it's almost like hearing a remix of a song you love so much. You can really pinpoint. Okay, I remember that. I don't like that so much. Yeah, I appreciate that it's coming out in HD. You almost get the sense like those stockholders must have been like, guys, Uncle George, there's so much money that he could have been made if he just released these dang things the way we want them released. So I get the sense that like Disney, they're trying to keep obviously the fire alive for The Force Awakens, which is smart, and they're also giving the fans mostly what they want, but obviously they're holding out like the golden ring, so to speak. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the Christmas present this year.
So now, right, absolutely. With that in mind, though, do you think that with all of this momentum for Star Wars now that's being built, do you think that for us to recapture all the magic of this is now the right time? Should we be waiting a little later, or are we in a good space right now?
I wouldn't be surprised if they've got a month-by-month game plan, in terms of like what they're going to leak, what they're going to show, what's going to happen at Comic-Con, the trailer that apparently is in front of the Avengers. I wouldn't be surprised if they've got it all planned so like there's something every month. Because, I mean, they've invested so much in buying this franchise. There's so much riding on The Force Awakens. I mean, we're hoping that it's an awesome movie. I know Disney is hoping that it's a great movie because they're spending the farm on this movie.
And so the fact that they've spent the farm on, they didn't, but they technically have. They spent the farm on the Avengers, or they are banking on the Marvel Universe as much as the Star Wars Universe. I mean, you can only imagine the money that's being pumped into both of those franchises. It's ridiculous. And, at this point, we may have, in the beginning, as fanboys, we may have cried foul when, the House of Mouse picked it up. But to be honest, they're the only ones that could probably generate the funds to do this properly. So, with that in mind, because, they have not only movies, but, of course, the parks, the merchandising, the whole nine, they've got it down pat. So, you know, I'm not too upset about it now. I think it's a good thing that they got their hands on these properties. It's a good idea for them to do it because they have the wherewithal to take care of it. And they have the in-house animators, the in-house effects. They've got all of this stuff that they don't even have to pay for. They bought ILM for crying out loud.
Right.
You know what I mean? Industrial Light Magic. George Lucas's baby. They bought it. So now they don't even have to go anywhere for that anymore. They can do the effects for Avengers with Star Wars effects people. It's ridiculous.
They got a good game plan, and they've got the deep pockets for something this ambitious because you remember all too well, New Line Cinema was doing great with the Lord of the Rings films. They bet the house on the Golden Compass, and next thing you know, New Line Cinema goes bankrupt. Right. And this, you know, and Disney, I mean, like, obviously nothing's going to sink Disney. I mean, if any movie was going to sink that company, it was going to be John Carter. No matter how we feel about that movie, that thing was a huge disaster. And even last year, The Lone Ranger, a huge disaster. The financial sinkhole. They just brushed it off and moved on and purchased Lucasfilms.
I hated John Carter.
I wasn't a fan.
I
hated
it. I
don't like Taylor Kitsch, though. I just don't think he can carry
Taylor
a movie.
Taylor Kitsch is horrible. I'm sorry. Taylor Kitsch, you know, you ride the acting wheel until it falls off for you, pal, because I'm not you. I don't look as good as you. I will say I do like him in Battleship. That's about it. And I love Battleship.
Did you like him in Lone Survivor?
Yes, I did. I have to say it because I love Lone Survivor. But John Carter was an absolute flop because you should have just called it John Carter from Mars. That would have been a much better title. When you look at John Carter, it's like, whatever. Who gives
it's
a
like we were embarrassed at From Mars.
Right, From Mars. It was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. But you're right. I will say that I liked Lone Ranger more than you did. And it was a shame. It was a shame that it was such a disaster at the box office. I don't think people were prepared with the Avengers and with the superhero mantra that's going around Hollywood right now. You know, gotta make a superhero movie, gotta make a superhero movie, gotta make a superhero movie. Nobody was ready for the Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
Not for a legitimate hero. Not much less, you know, he's a hero, not a superhero by any stretch. He has no special powers. You know, he has an Indian sidekick, you know, that says Mi Tanto, and that's not appealing to the younger audience. And that, you know, and it's a real shame because I think there are some points of magic in that movie for me, and there are others that, of course, were complete misses in my book.
Yeah.
I liked it much more than you did. Anyway, moving on to more Star Wars information from the House of Mouse. I tell you, Professor Barry, there has been a trailer that will be they have confirmed a trailer for the Avengers Age of Ultron for Star Wars. There will be a Star Wars trailer on the Avengers Age of Ultron film. It'll be a 2-minute trailer.
Wow.
And there has been details, according to Making Star Wars, that they say that are legitimate reveals for the new trailer. Would you like to hear them?
Some of them.
Okay.
If there's 10, I'd like to 4.
I would like, okay. I will give you, I'll give you 4.
Okay.
Okay. The runtime is just under 2 minutes, about a minute 50.
Okay.
We will see, according to Making Star Wars, Finn, John Boyega from the teaser. He will be with a blue lightsaber in hand, which is interesting. I will give you another one. Han Solo, Princess Leia, R2-D2, and C-3PO are all in this trailer.
Wow.
That's 2. I may have to make it a 5 out of the 10.
The 2-minute one, you didn't need it.
Right.
Yeah,
okay, we won't count that then.
Okay.
This is a tough one.
Save some good ones, though.
There is a good one, and I'm not revealing anything just because we know the originals. Darth Vader's helmet is sitting on a podium. Don't know what that means.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't know if somebody takes the mantle of. You can't become Darth Vader. You're Darth something else, obviously. But that's another one. One that isn't so. That isn't exactly surprising. We get a brief shot of what's her name? Rey. She's one of the, I guess, the daughters of Han Solo. and Princess Leia.
She's the one we saw already. Daisy the
Ridley.
Trailers.
Yeah, Daisy Ridley. Yeah. We're gonna get to see multiple shots of her.
Okay.
And then finally, one more. Poe Dameron, Oscar Isaac's character, he's going to be shooting down a TIE fighter in the new trailer.
Cool.
So, you know, there are a couple more in here that deal with other characters that I'll leave out for you. But I will say this, that I will reveal two more things because it's not really a spoiler.
Okay.
There's two more that I want you to know about. There will be no Andy Serkis.
Hmm.
And no Luke Skywalker.
Wow.
Yeah. So so that way you're not going in there thinking that we're going to see Luke Skywalker. That way you know. You're right. Maybe I'm the guy who's thinking that the momentum for this is too early. This is going to be, they've attached it to the Avengers. So obviously you're already speaking, you're already preaching to the choir, you're already speaking to the audience. Yep. You would think that this would be on something that Disney, you know, wanted to push more, maybe?
Tomorrowland. Which doesn't have a built-in audience, it's not a sequel, it's not a sure thing, even though it looks wonderful, but I was expecting Tomorrowland, to
right.
be honest.
Did you, by the way, getting off of this subject real quick, did you see the Japanese trailer for Tomorrowland that I posted on the Nerdwatch?
I haven't. I've seen the extended trailer, but not
you
the
should
Japanese
see the
trailer.
You should see the trailer that was posted on the for Japan.
Yep.
It's quite an interesting reveal of the movie in itself, and I'm a little more interested, but a little not. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about Tomorrowland. Here's something that's funny. You know who the editor is for Tomorrowland? I mean, not that you know the name, but some people won't. Walter Murch.
Oh my God! One of the greatest editors ever.
Ever.
Ever. Yeah.
He's editing Tomorrowland.
Wow!
I couldn't believe it. I looked at the credits and I was like, Walter Murch is editing Tomorrowland? Where did he come out of hiding?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I don't remember the last thing I saw Walter Murch's name attached to.
Maybe Talent of Mr. Ripley.
Maybe.
I mean, he's like one of the.
Maybe.
Well, it's funny. I mean, like, you know, if you're. You know, it's like if you mentioned who's like the greatest composer alive, you say John Williams.
John Williams.
Who's the greatest editor? It's Walter Murch. That's,
right.
That's interesting.
Right. He's. You could say that you could put him on. This guy is. When you have the Star Wars universe up here and you have a league of editors, that's one of the guys. Walter
right.
Murch is one of the guys. So when I saw that, I was like, whoa, now I'm. My interest is peaked because I'm such a movie guy, and I know his name, and I know his work, and I know how good he is.
And he directed Return to Oz, which I freaking love.
Yes, he did. I love Return to Oz. Great movie. Under the Disney cap, too, as well.
That's right.
You know? Yeah. When am I going to get my Blu-ray of Return to Oz? Love that movie.
Oh, they don't like that one.
I know they don't.
They're going to... That one is so pushed. They're going to have a DVD of that, like, next to, like, Song of the South and Trenchcoat and Condor Man.
Oh.
They're like, this never happened. Move on. We have Oz the Great and Powerful.
Oh, that's such a terrible movie. But anyway, moving back to Star Wars. Do you think, with the momentum that Star Wars currently has, do you think that now attaching it to something like the Avengers, it seems like they're really starting to poke and prod at the fanboy base as opposed to getting new people in?
Gosh, I mean, I remember, and I know I told you this when I had the chance to do this, when I was living in Denver,
right.
And I had a chance to see The Dark Knight early. It was only a few days early, but still, it was earlier than the release date, and it was a very big deal, and all the critics had to go to this specially, you know, secretly, you know, it was this great IMAX theater in Denver, but, you know, it was like we had to be there at 8 a.m., we couldn't tell anybody, we couldn't bring anybody with us. And, you know, and I'm thrilled out of my mind, you know, all the build up to seeing Heath Ledger's final movie, you know, the first Batman, Chris Nolan sequel. And they had, and I didn't know it was going to be in front of it, they had the first Watchmen trailer in front of it.
Mm.
And the first Watchmen trailer, you know, and I have mixed feelings with the movie itself.
Me
but the
too.
First, yeah, but the first Watchmen trailer is so magnificent. And it honestly took me a good 5 minutes before I even registered that I was watching The Dark Knight once it finally started, because that Watchmen trailer is so transfixing and powerful. And I wonder if it's going to be the same thing if, like, you know, come May, you know, we're going to watch The Force Awakens trailer and it's going to be like, okay, great, Tony Stark, wow, like Han Solo and Princess Leia look so good, you know. So all that to say, Disney, they know what they're doing. I mean, I didn't think it was possible to beat the $200 million opening weekend of The Avengers, which is the biggest ever. But, I mean, if that Star Wars trailer is what they say it is, they could very well have it. Because that's double the nerd fanboy audience right there.
I can see when people are watching or going in to watch The Avengers, I can see nerds either A, having heart attacks, collapsing or going, I'm out, and they just walk out and don't even watch the Avengers.
Sure, you know
what I'm saying? I'm done. I'm waiting till Force Awakens.
If it's that amazing, because that's what the Phantom Menace trailer was like. I mean, you remember like that first teaser trailer? I mean, it's one of the best trailers ever. I mean, it's a brilliant little movie in and of itself. It was so good.
Absolutely. I think that this is... I have mixed feelings about this. I think it's a good thing, and I also think it's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing because, you know, you obviously are speaking to the nerd culture and the people that have surrounded themselves with it, because you know the people that are into Star Wars are probably really into the Avengers. But I also feel bad for that Disney movie that's going to get lost in the shuffle. And I think that Tomorrowland may be that one. It may be that one. I'm surprised that they didn't attach the Star Wars trailer to Ant-Man. That would have been, I think that would have been a much better play.
It's a good point, because you'd want to, because that's what they did with The Phantom Menace. The Phantom Menace was attached to Meet Joe Black, was attached to The Siege, and What Dreams May Come. Movies that, you know, whatever you think about them, they're not exactly heavy hitters. Those movies really benefited from having Star Wars attached to them. And the, as we know, the box office trailed off of those movies once the second weekend came.
Right.
The trailer was gone, the movies were still there, and people were like, why want to see The Siege? So, so you're absolutely right. It would make more sense if they would put it against Ant-Man, which is a big question mark this summer.
Right, but then again, it's Disney, so they don't really give a crap, right? They're like, we're going to put it where we want to put it, so whatever.
It could very well be the biggest opening of all time.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think that the Avengers has got a lot to live up to, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it because, you could say that they're balancing the excitement for both, maybe. Maybe that's what they're doing. Everybody's going to be really excited about Star Wars when they watch it, and some of that expectation for Avengers might come down. So it's a possibility that's how they're working it, and that's a very smart move, by the way. So I'm very excited to see the trailer. Under 2 minutes, we're going to get a minute 50, and maybe we'll get some little chunks of goodness of
that's
story.
That's a long time. That's a lot of stuff you could fit in there. That's exciting, because I remember seeing the running time for the Phantom Menace trailer back in the day, like, wow, that's almost 2 minutes of stuff. And you know, we know that Abrams, he's very selective with every single moment. So, that's a lot of stuff.
All I want to know is how many lens flares we're going to see. You know, for everybody that gripes about his lens flares, I love J.J. Abrams' lens flares.
If that's his biggest fault, then who cares?
That's what I say.
It's like, whatever. This guy, like, the story is good. He's great at selecting cast. He's great with actors. There's a number of performances in his movies that I say, this is maybe the best thing I've ever seen this actor do. If lens flares is his biggest sin, who cares,
man? That's what I say. I love his lens flares. Every time he does them, I like them. I don't know.
It's like when we were kids, like the Spielbergian glow. You know what? Spielbergian glow is awesome. It's cool. It looks great. Like, that's not a problem. That's a style.
And it still is. And I think he's used it still.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm positive. Even a movie's it has no purpose. It has no, you know, like, why is there Spielbergian glow in Munich? But there is.
Who
cares? It's Spielberg.
It's him. So I am super, super excited about the Star Wars trailer for sure.
God, we're a month away now.
Yeah, we are a month away. Can you believe it? This year is going by quick already.
I can't even fathom
that. What have you been here? 2 years now, almost? A year? Or over a year and a half now you've been here?
On Maui?
On Maui.
It's going to be 1 year this June.
Do 1 year this June?
That's
quick.
Yeah.
That is super quick.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
And a better summer than last, because when I first came here, I was like, okay, Transformers. Great.
Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Oh, God.
Great.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The summer's going to be much better.
It's going to be much, much better. I cannot wait. And we'll get to watch the movies together, which is going to be fantastic. It'll be fun. Okay. Now, Professor Barry, I know you're not much on TV. Anything you've been watching as of late?
Just Bates Motel.
Bates Motel?
Steady stream to Bates Motel.
Steady stream, I like the way you put that. What are you thinking so far?
It's great. Yeah.
Should people be getting into this now, or should they be backtracking to the first season to get into it?
Oh, definitely start with the first one.
Okay.
The build has been really wonderful. They're obviously building towards the events of Robert Bloch's Psycho in a modern context. So it feels like all the ducks are in a row. It feels like the character is really starting to progress. I wouldn't be surprised if, let's just say by the end of this season, a lot of people that we like are no longer alive. I'd say start from the beginning. You won't regret it. It's a great story.
All right. I want to know more about it, but I don't want it to get ruined. I do know that The Flash has had an amazing reveal last week, Tuesday, that I don't want to give away. The Flash is progressing very nicely. If you are in... I know you're superheroed out, but
I am.
if there is something that strikes the mood, you should watch The Flash. It's very good. Plus, since it's just you and I, let's talk a little reality TV here. Any reality TV that you're enjoying at this point?
Not enjoying, but enduring, because
what are you enduring?
My lovely wife loves these awful, awful shows. I mean, I ended up watching the end of The Bachelor, which I'm embarrassed to say.
That's so horrible.
It's torture watching
I'm
the
sorry.
End of the Rose, the last Rose.
Oh,
and
so
it's never
sorry.
The last, because then there's another season and they do it again. So that was
so
torture. What else? There's the... humiliate. I shouldn't even be admitting this, but oh well.
You might as well. We're here.
What's that date naked or naked dating on MTV? That awful show.
It's
like a nudist dating, and they're all pixelated out, and they're on an island. God awful show. Yeah, it's only terrible, terrible
what
shows.
What the heck?
Yeah, I want to watch reruns of the original Twilight Zone. Julia wants to watch like The Bachelor. So
Will say this: that I'm not a huge reality show fan. I like the game show reality competition shows. I'm a huge fan of Survivor. Survivor this year has been a lot of fun.
I love MasterChef.
Hell's Kitchen has been good this year so far. This season has been very good. I will say, just because I was thinking about starting a podcast for the ladies, I looked into watching some Vanderpump Rules, which is on Bravo Television. I did get into that a little bit. Now I was in for a few minutes, and then I was like, as soon as I realized what I was doing, I said, I'm out. I'm done.
I was like,
I was actually getting enthralled a bit, and I was like really going to myself, you do realize that this is not reality, right? And I was like, okay, good, I'm done. And so I moved on. But I did record a few episodes of the Vanderpump Rules, and that was a mistake. Because I got stuck watching. It was awful.
Are you familiar with the show? I just came across it today, and I don't know if it's even on anymore, but it was called Vanilla Ice Goes Amish.
Yes!
Is that any good?
On DIY.
I would watch that, because that sounds interesting.
Anything with Vanilla
Ice
in
the title.
Oh my God, that's great. Vanilla Ice is doing, he buys homes and he flips them.
Yeah.
That's his thing.
I remember that.
Oh, that's a great show.
That was a good show. Yeah.
Goes Amish is great because I think he does the same thing except in Amish territory, which is great. And he learns how to be Amish. It's crazy, dude.
So it's Ice in Pennsylvania.
Oh man, it's good. You gotta watch it. It's Ice in Pennsylvania.
Sweet.
He's Dutch Ice.
So it's kind of like the plot of Cool as Ice, but with the Amish.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Oh man, you should watch it. I think you'll enjoy the absurdity of the whole of it all. So you'll like it.
Cool.
Anywho, television. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. I'm trying to catch up with Empire. Me and Format were talking about that. I got to start watching that. I got to catch up with Bates Motel. Game of Thrones is coming back April 12th. I've got two whole seasons to watch before I even get to the fifth season. HBO Now is premiering. For those that don't want to have a cable subscription, they can pay $15 a month just for HBO. A lot of things are changing in the television space. Cable is not the only way to go anymore. So it's becoming smart, because the free market wins out. And if cable can't compete, there are other avenues to watch what you want to watch. So that's very, very, very cool. Speaking of what you want to watch, Professor Barry, this week in videos, Amber did not have an opportunity to post anything, but there are a couple of notables that I wanted to talk about that came out this week. First off, like I said, Star Wars this week, Friday, comes out. That's all six movies digitally. It's coming out April 10th. Also, a couple of movies that I want to mention because I like him. Burt Reynolds has got a couple of Blu-rays coming out, Sharky's Machine and Hooper.
I like Sharky. That's the one he directed.
I love Sharky's Machine. And Hooper is great because that's the one he did right after Smokey and the Bandit.
It's a stunt movie, right?
That's a stunt movie.
Yeah.
Is that a
Hal Needham
movie?
Oh,
that's a Hal Needham movie. It's good. You should watch it. It's very good. Sally Field is in it. She's beautiful and enchanting. And their scenes together are just wonderful.
They had good chemistry.
They had great chemistry together. They were dating at the time even.
Yeah.
So I love Hooper. I'm a sucker for some of those Burt Reynolds things. You know, I like Burt Reynolds.
I've always wanted to see Hooper because I heard it was what inspired, at least in part, The Fall Guy.
It did. It did. If you remember that Hooper also, that was it. What also came on the heels of that was the movie with Peter O'Toole.
The Stuntman.
Stuntman.
That's
a very
film.
Weird and
It is a weird film. I like The Stuntman. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very much, Hooper kind of got lost in that shuffle. You know, The Stuntman wasn't very well received when it came out. Yeah. A lot of people didn't like it, but there are a lot of people that say it's a masterpiece. I'm assuming you're one of those guys.
I like it a lot. I wouldn't say a masterpiece. I think the Richard Rush movie I like even more because it's not good, but I enjoyed is Color of Night, which is the only other movie I think
with Bruce Willis. Oh, that's I hate that
it's
movie.
It's trash, but I enjoy trash. But I enjoy the Color of Night. But anyway, yeah, Richard Rush. I've never thought the Stuntman was quite the masterpiece everybody said it to be, yeah. But I think mostly because Steve Railsback, who's a good actor, I think he's so intense that he's not the most likable actor, and certainly not
I
in
like
that.
Steve Railsback.
Do you?
I really do.
I liked him in Life Force, but I thought in Stuntman, he just I don't know. He seemed like he's made of like granite. I couldn't quite warm up to him.
No, you're right. You're right. I agree with you on that, but I do like Steve Railsback as an actor. He's fun.
Stuntman, yeah.
Yeah, Stuntman was another one. Hooper came out today on Blu-ray. So did Detroit Rock City. Not the best of movies. Rifkin.
No.
Not one of the best movies.
Yeah,
I like
Edward
it
Furlong,
yeah. Edward Furlong. Empire Records came out with Liv Tyler.
I've never seen that. I know the soundtrack really well. Seen
the movie's not bad. You could take a look at it.
It's Alan Moyle, the guy who did Pump Up the Volume. I've always wanted to see it just because he directed it.
Right. Also, Silent Running starring Bruce Dern.
It's a good one.
Yeah, that isn't a bad one, is it? So there's a couple of things here and there that's coming out, trickling out for the spring. Oh, and your movie that you say that you didn't like, A Most Violent Year, actually came out. That was the big movie of the week this week.
Hmm.
With the
Oscar Isaac and
Oscar
the lovely
Isaac,
Jessica Chastain.
Jessica Chastain.
Yeah.
I've got a lot. There's a lot of movies I'm trying to catch up on, by the way, that I'm hoping that I still got. Did you write your review for Furious 7, by the way?
Yes, for a different periodical.
Yes, I know that.
So that's why. So anybody else's review should go up.
Fantastic.
On the
site, that's what I'm saying. I'm working on my Furious 7 this week, and then if I can also get back that Interstellar editor or the Interstellar review I gave you.
Oh,
you
I
still
don't know
have,
if I got it.
You still have it.
I
do
have
you
it?
Don't? Yeah, you should.
I don't think I ever got it. The
what?
Last thing I got Jason's, excuse me, I got Format's review of Home, but no, I don't think I ever got your, I'm positive I never got your Interstellar review.
What?
Yeah.
I sent it to, gosh dang it. All right, I'm going to send it to
you
again.
Yeah, I swear I don't have it. I'm sorry.
All right,
yeah.
I'll send it to you again. I was waiting for my Interstellar review like this whole time, and I thought because you were busy, I didn't.
No, please send it. Yeah, I never got it for whatever reason. All right, yeah.
I'll look into getting that for sure.
Okay.
sorry,
man.
Yeah, sorry about that. I thought we had it. By the way, Professor Barry is also an editor in chief at the Nerd Watch as well. He does some great stuff.
Does that make me like James? I never say it right. The Spider-Man guy. You know his name.
Oh, Garfield. No.
No.
Jonah Jameson.
Yes. I can never say his name right.
Yes, you're the editor-in-chief of the Daily Bugle.
The crusty editor-in-chief.
Yeah, the Daily Bugle. Parker! Yeah, I know what you're talking about. All right, well,
Speaking of comic books,
yes.
One last thing.
What you got?
I gotta know what you think about this because I will watch Daredevil because I love the character.
That is exactly what I was gonna mention.
You a fan of the movie?
I love the director's cut of the Ben Affleck film.
Everyone tells me that, and that's because Coolio's in it, right?
It's not just Coolio.
To bring it full circle back to Dangerous Minds, Coolio's in it.
Mark Steven Johnson, the director of that film, it seemed like when you watched the one that was put into theaters, it seemed like he was handcuffed by the studio to cut the film. So when you watch the director's cut, it's a much different film.
Really?
They cut out the love story between Elektra and Daredevil, and she becomes a little lesser of a character in it. I think you should watch it. Daredevil director's cut is a much better film than anybody gives it credit for.
Wow.
The one in the theater wasn't very good, but Daredevil, the movie, the director's cut, is actually serviceable.
Who does Coolio play?
I'm not telling.
Okay. All right. Now I got to see it. So I want to know.
Speaking of the Daredevil, I didn't move the table. Speaking of the Daredevil, April 10th, Professor Barry, and Digit, and Format are all in for watching the Daredevil series on Netflix.
Yeah.
We're watching that for sure.
Absolutely.
And we're gonna come back here next week, and we'll talk a little bit about that and tell us what everybody thinks about it for sure. So that is without a doubt the Netflix pick of the week. So if you're gonna we're gonna be giving away possibly spoilers. So guys, watch the show Netflix, the Daredevil show. We're excited about it because they're gonna build its own little mini Avengers. The Iron Fist and all those other guys are gonna start building their own little franchise on Netflix, which is gonna be a lot of fun.
Nice.
Now, Before we leave, Professor Barry, before we get out of here, you can check us out at facebook.com/TheNerdWatch. All of Professor Barry's reviews and his Looking Back articles are on mywatch.com. Anything you should be looking for this week?
Yeah, this week, you know, I think it's one of the best I've written. I've really dug deep for it. I wrote a Looking Back article on M. Night Shyamalan's Unbreakable.
Love that movie!
One of the great comic book movies, if not one of the greatest comic book movies.
Yep.
And a film that's lesser known, but I think it deserves more attention because there's brilliance in it. Akira Kurosawa's Dreams, which is also celebrating an anniversary this year.
Oh, fantastic. Now, Format, you gave it away. Our very own Format has a review of Home.
Yes.
The animated film from DreamWorks. So that'll be going up soon, I hope.
I finished editing it. It's a great review. It made me want to see the movie, which I didn't really want to do before I read his review. So,
all right, fantastic. Well, I've got Interstellar on the docket. I've got Whiplash on the docket. I've got my Exodus: Gods and Kings, which I'm still getting to put up. And I had a couple other things I was going to put up as well that I'm going to just
keep them coming.
Keep them coming. I'll get them to you. But yeah, like I said before we go, I do want to know, what did you think of WrestleMania?
Oh, wonderful.
When you went up with everybody?
Just wonderful.
Was it great?
I've been trying to think about which match was my favorite. There's so many. There were honestly so many great moments. So many great moments.
By the way, Professor Barry and I and a bunch of our friends, we get together for WrestleMania and we shared the fellowship together of watching Mania together. So what did you think? Where was your favorite match?
Oh, man. Let's see. Oh, gosh.
Was it Sting and Triple H? Was it Seth Rollins and Randy Orton? Was it Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar?
It was the battle of the Russian.
Rusev and John Cena.
That was John Cena. That was my favorite.
That was the most blatantly shameless, patriotic and anti-patriotic match you'll ever see.
It was amazing.
Loved it. You forget how much grandeur and show goes into a wrestling show sometimes, of that magnitude. You know, that's for them to bring all that stuff together for that was a lot of fun.
I'm a theater guy. It was great theater.
It was
great drama.
Right.
Oh, awesome.
It was Rocky IV Part II,
yes,
is what it was. Well, I'm glad you liked it. Well, when we do it again, we're probably going to do it for SummerSlam, so be prepared.
Sweet.
I'm glad you were there. I'm glad you're enjoying. I'm glad you're having a good time with that.
Yeah.
I am such a huge wrestling fan. I love it now, loved it then, and love it forever. So that's just me. Well, Professor Barry, I certainly appreciate you coming by tonight. I know that you were running behind. I didn't mean to rush you down here.
No, not at all. I'm glad I made it.
I'm glad we had this time to talk. We've got more reviews going up on facebook.com/TheNerdWatch, on MauiWatch.com, where you can read our reviews. You can also get our podcast on MauiWatch.com as well, also on iTunes as well, and on any format you enjoy listening to your pods is where you can get that as well. So you got a lot of stuff coming up, so do I. It's going to be a big week. We're going to be watching Daredevil, Avengers, we're going to be all watching together. There's just so much stuff happening for us right now because of the summertime. So I'm glad that we're having an opportunity to do it together. And Furious 7 was the first of many more to come. So that's going to be great. All right, ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful week. I hope you guys watch some Daredevil. Tell us what you think on our NerdWatch Facebook page, facebook.com/TheNerdWatch. You can follow us at NerdWatch Nation on Twitter. And, of course, our the_NerdWatch on Instagram as well. We're out of time. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you back here, same time, same channel, next week. And until then, in the words of the lovely islands, we always forget that where we are, where we live, we have a unique perspective. We live on the beautiful island of Maui. Professor Barry has come home, rightly so. And by the way, I just wanted to let you guys know as well that Professor Barry is also our resident RottenTomatoes.com guy as well. And the founder of the Hawaii Film Critics Society as well, so you can check that out as well. By the way, what is the website for that?
HIFilmCriticsWithAnSSociety.org.
Fantastic. I'm glad it was started by you, someone that I have pool with, which is great. So that's fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful week wherever you are. By the way, we got listeners all over the country, apparently.
Sweet.
So that's great. I'm glad you guys are listening with Aloha. We certainly appreciate it. And with that in mind, peace out, much love, and most assuredly, always stay nerdy. And until next time, in the words of these beautiful islands, Aloha!